most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. And our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you question your career reality. This show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests will provide advice and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. Our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means that we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested. If you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website, latalkradio.com. Click on the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. Scroll down, look for a graphic of the show, Question Reality, and click the link. Now, if you are listening to this live, you are already on the website, so you can just go directly there and click right on that link. And that takes you directly to our archive page where you can view the list of past guests. Now, our shows are also available for download on iTunes under the podcast section. So just type in Question Reality Radio in the search box on iTunes, and there we are. Now, if you want to find out about our future guests, you want to go to our official Question Reality website, and that will show you all of the guests from next week all the way until August. I think we're booked until the end of August. Yes. And that website address is questionrealityshow.com. Yay. And it is what is today? It is April Fool's Day, I believe. Have not played a joke on anyone today. I have been trying to plot all day how to play something, a joke on my husband. Cannot come up with anything original. I think I have April Fool's joke block today. So hopefully someone can email me a way to play a good one on him. Now, we have a fantastic guest today, as we do every week. Her name is Christina Linhart. That's kind of hard to say. Linhart. But I like it, though. Very catchy. She is a soprano opera singer, and we are going to talk to her in a moment. But what I want you to do is to check out her website right now while I am reading this wonderful advertisement. You know, I love to do my personal endorsements and my advertisements. So check her out, and we will come back to her in a moment. Her website is circussanctuary.com. Circus Sanctuary, CircusSanctuary, circussanctuary.com. And you can go look up everything about her. So when we're talking to her, you kind of have an idea of what she does, what's going on. Yeah. Now, first, I want to talk about this really, really, really cool thing that's happening. It is called, it's called Creepy Caress. Now, you think automatically hear that, you think, oh my God, is that the latest sexually transmitted disease? No, it is not, people. It is not. It is an LA-based sketch comedy group founded by someone we had on the show recently. Her name is Brenda Kalana, a comedian, and Candace Thompson. And they have, between the two of them, they have like a decade of experience writing and performing comedy. And they've been on Comedy Central, MTV, and Fox. And the pair bring a really fresh perspective to taboo and offensive subjects, such as Creepy Caress. And what is so exciting about this is that this is really cool. If you are familiar with Kickstarter, Indiegogo, these are websites that you can pretty much put anything on these websites if you want to raise money. That's how you get donations for things. Say you want to patent something, you invented something, you need money, put it on Kickstarter or Indiegogo. And then you send emails out and you get people to donate money. So this is what filmmakers are doing, actors are doing, comedians are doing to get projects funded. So it's very exciting for them to get the money, because that means that they're going to be able to do a campaign. So, but what they're doing is they are offering supporters of their Kickstarter campaign the opportunity to be in and a part of their new web series. And they have incentives. So when you donate, they have incentives. And that ranges from having a character or appearance in a sketch all the way up to directing a full episode. So that's very, very exciting for people in the entertainment business, because it's an opportunity to be a part of something really cool, a web series, comedy, and they can act in it or they can direct a full episode, depending on the amount of money that they donate. And the reason that they're doing this is that, bottom line, as I said, it takes a lot of money to produce film and TV projects. So this is one of the ways that you go about it to get things done. Now, they had seen other film and web projects having great success at getting funding through Kickstarter. Again, great way to raise money while maintaining artistic control as well. And they wanted their supporters to be able to get involved in the creation, not just the end result. So that's why they're doing this. Now, their Kickstarter campaign started on March 9th, and it goes up until next week, April the 8th. So they're hoping to raise over $6,000 to cover the cost of equipment and reward the talents of the cast and crew, which is very, very important, because they really respect the artist's time and talent, which we all should. And everybody really wanted to make sure that they were compensated and to be able to include the highest level of talent available. So please, 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 please help these artists out and get involved with possibly being a part of the process, which would be really cool. So you can find out, excuse me, I'm losing my voice here. You can find out more about Creepy Caress on Facebook and Twitter. So at Twitter, it's at Creepy Caress, CreepyCaress, or you can go to the Kickstarter website, kickstarter.com, and type in Creepy Caress Show. So that's really cool, people. It's an opportunity to give a little money and then be part of the show. Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen, but I would do it if I were you. So there you go. So hopefully everyone has had an opportunity to look over Christina Linhart's website. So let's talk just real briefly about who she is and what she does. She's enjoyed an eclectic, versatile career as a concert singer, crossover artist, actress, and dancer, working steadily throughout Southern California and Germany. Now, she's most known for her Classics to Cabaret act, which is the headliner for the opening of the Grand Concert Hall, Parksaal, in Saxony, Germany, and her independently produced solo CDs, which Circus Sanctuary and Voodoo Princess, both of which have passed into the adult contemporary commercial radio scene for hot airplay. So she is on fire, fire, fire. So, oh, circus, fire. Oh, it's all relating. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So without further ado, let's talk to her. Christina, are you there?
I'm here. Happy April Fool's Day.
Oh, yay. Have you played any April Fool's jokes on anyone today?
No, I haven't, but believe it or not, I'm having an April Fool's party not far from me right now. There's a whole bunch of official fools right down in my rec room here at my condo.
What? Oh, my
yeah.
God. I've never heard of anyone throwing an April Fool's party. That is so cool. What?
Yeah,
what does...
it's our high holy day, because for fools, it's the high holy day. So, yeah, I've got a whole bunch of official fools.
Well, what does one do at an April Fool's party? Like, what would what could you do to make it really fun? Because now you've piqued my interest.
Well, each Fool's Party has a different theme. And this is for the Fool's Guild, which is like a real guild of fools, which is jugglers, clowns, magicians, anyone who identifies with the archetype of the fool. So this year's theme was thought of by the king, and she just wanted to have like a kid's party because she's turning 68. And so she thought for her 68th birthday, she's going to have a kid's party.
That is totally cool. I wish I was over there right now and we were doing a live show.
I know, that would be fun.
With a bunch of drunken people. What's better than listening to a bunch of drunken people be fools? There you go. Well, that's perfect. Now, Christina, let's start, since this is the first time you've been on the show, let's start with my standard question. When you were a little tiny Christina Lindhardt, what did you want to do? Who did you want to be?
Well, you know, I had an eclectic and interesting upbringing, too. My parents took us to Europe every summer for about 3 or 4 months, so I spent a lot of time in Europe. And my dad was a writer and sort of a cultural liaison, and so we spent a lot of time with amazing artists and writers and musicians. And so I was always around cabaret and music, although I started off playing the flute, and I was going to be a classical flute player, and because my brother was a French horn player, so I was competing with him. So at first I thought I was going to be a symphony player, but I was always around the arts, but I always sort of fantasized about more theatrical and the circus.
So did you see yourself, as a lot of children do, joining the circus, running away and joining the circus?
You know, I don't know if I ever thought about running off with the circus, but I do remember when I was a little kid in Switzerland, there was the red light district where we'd hang out a lot, but they'd also had, like, you know, musicians and street entertainers and buskers, and they had a children's circus, the Kinderzirkus, and I went every night. I was just obsessed with it. I was just, yeah, obsessed with it. I know when I was a kid, I always pictured myself more backstage somewhere. I don't know where, but I always saw the backstage in my fantasies.
Did you say that you grew up in Switzerland? Are you Swiss?
No, we spend a lot of time in Switzerland. Like, I was here in Los Angeles, and then the summers we were in Switzerland, Germany, Austria. So I have both U.S. and German citizenship.
Now, how cool is that, people? How jealous are we of Christina Lindhardt spending her summers in Switzerland? Now, isn't it actually winter in Switzerland when it's summer here? So you got to ski down a mountain like Heidi in Switzerland?
No, it's warm because they're it's down in South Africa or beneath the equator where it's winter. But no, summer here was summer there too. So it was very warm.
Tells you how much I know about geography. We'll quickly move on from that subject. But that must have been so super cool to spend your summers in Europe. My God. Now, did you go because Europe is known for many things, including great operas? Did you go to a lot of operas as a child? Is that what it kind of also influenced you?
Yeah, I was around a lot of opera. Now, we went to Europe for my dad's work, and it was cool, but it was also hard. I mean, it was, you know, because we were constantly going around visiting, you know, politicians, and so I had to be very proper. But we did see a lot of opera, and we actually went to Bayreuth, which is where, you know, Richard Wagner started his whole opera. That was his, like, the mecca of opera is Bayreuth, because we knew Richard Wagner's great-grandson, Gottfried Wagner.
Wow.
So I would see Wagner operas at age 7.
Don't tell me you had high tea and biscuits with him, right?
Coffee and Kuchen, which is coffee and cake, yeah.
Well, that's kind of close. Okay. So,
yeah, it is.
So when you're going through school, you get to high school, you got to make a decision what you're going to do. What's going through your mind as to, okay, now I got to buckle down and figure out what I got to do for a career? What was happening then?
Well, I went to high school. I went to a music academy, to the Hamilton Music Academy. So I was already career oriented at age probably 15. I was already doing some gigs as a flute player, and I was all Miss Competition and stuff. I've relaxed a little bit now. But so I was playing flute at the music academy, and that's when I made the switch to singing and dancing, because I was in the pit. And I was saying, wait a second, I want to be up there. You know, I was playing the kids' musical. I'm like, wait a second, get me up there. So I made my switch at the Music Academy. And it was actually, it turned out to be a really easy transition. I realize now how lucky and grateful I am because my dad was a professor at USC. And we would get full tuition remission. So I didn't have to pay for college. And USC has the best music and theater program. So I didn't apply anywhere else. I didn't, you know, my grades were great. I didn't worry. I just went to USC. And I realize now how fortunate I was, how many people are buried under student loans and all that. I realize now I'm very grateful for that.
That is very true, Miss Privilege Silver Spoon. We're Well, hey, you know, it had to come one day, Christina, because I've had a starving artist for 3 years. It was just bound to happen that I would get a silver spoon sooner or later. So thank you for gracing my radio show with some class and elegance and refinery today. And we hear all about the privilege side of things. We are not going to hear that you ate tuna fish and hot dogs for a week. No, it was all ribeye steak all the way and beluga caviar. I love that. Now,
well, actually, though, my dad, you know, he was a professor, so he didn't make that much money. So it was interesting because my mom was very Scottish about it all. She was, you know, so we scrimped and saved, but we were around a lot of wealth. So it was really interesting. So I had this both this rags to riches going on because, you know, she never bought me new clothes. We always had hand-me-downs. She was just so conservative. It was like depression mentality with the money. And yet we were around people who were quite well-to-do. So it was really interesting. And then when I was a teenager, I hung out with a lot of derelicts and in the projects. So I like bounced back and forth. The one thing I didn't do was just the middle road.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm Irish, so I can completely relate to you. My grandmother, oh my God, she could count down to a half cent where everything was. She would, every single penny she got, she was stuffing into a brick in the basement.
Oh, funny.
Eventually, the rats got a hold of it, and it was just a big, hot scene. But that's another story. But she was just, yeah, and so she was a penny pincher, but my grandfather was a lawyer, and he said, we have money. We don't have to eat potatoes 5 days a week. What's going on here? This is America. What's happening? So I can relate to that for sure. So let's talk about when you made that transition. Are you doing gigs now while you're in school? You're going out and you're actively pursuing gigs while you're going to school, and how easy was that easy for you? Tell us about what that is.
Yes. So I went out, you know, I was trying to already start doing something while I was in school. And so I was doing some 99 seat theater and stuff, you know, it really wasn't paying much, but I was already very conscious of trying to get gigs. So I wouldn't say it was necessarily easy, but I would say that I started off early enough so that when I did get out of college, I already sort of knew what to do. You know, it wasn't, I mean, you know, some of the gigs have been very glamorous, but a lot have just been, you know, whatever. You know, I did a lot of clown work and I did a lot of birthday parties, and which I actually think is really great for any entertainer to do, because it's just the hardest thing to do is to do kids' birthday parties.
That is an actual great way to supplement your income if you are an actor or a singer, a dancer, musician, because you're constantly performing and honing your skills, and you're also meeting contacts if you eventually want to do a project like we mentioned earlier, where they're going to be doing a web series. Those people that you play the parties for, a lot of times you, if you're good, they like you, and you get to do the parties again and again, and you become friends, and then it's easier to ask them for donations. So I just wanted to point that out, people. So let's move on, Christina. Always injecting things to do. Sorry, go ahead,
that's
Christina.
Good. No, that's smart. That's good, because a lot of people don't know what to do. And, you know, so I highly recommend anybody who's still in college to already start getting your feet wet a little bit, for sure. And yeah, and I think the kids' parties also, especially if you're an actor and entertainer, because they're hard, because you've got a moving audience. You don't have an audience that's going to sit there politely. If they don't like you, they're going to tell you. And so I think it's really important to learn. I don't do kids' parties anymore because it's too stressful for me. And
yes,
I don't have to.
But you would need medication after a while, correct?
So, you really do. And so it's, you know, but I learned a lot, and I especially learned a lot being the clown, because you really unleash, and it's being April Fool's Day right now, you really unleash a lot as a clown. And so your inner comedian and the freedom. So there's, I think doing kids parties, live entertainment, doing corporate parties, doing festivals, any of that stuff is really important to really hone your skills. I really do.
Well, let me ask you, let's talk about this whole clown bit for a minute, because mm-hmm. I have had some friends who have played, they do singing telegrams and they've done kids parties. And they have told me that after, usually most of them don't make it past three kids parties, and they say, I can't do it anymore. What is the secret to doing a kids party? What does it take to be successful? Because there are people who do that are listening to the show today that it's a fluke that you're talking about this, but they're listening and they gave up. They couldn't do more than three kids parties because they couldn't stand that they had such a short attention span. So what is the secret? What did you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think of my mentors who are downstairs right now in my rec room having their Fool's Guild party, who have been clowns for 20, 30 years. And I learned a lot from them. And I think, first of all, you know, knowing what you're going to do, what's expected, you know, like what does the client want, the face painting, the this, the balloons, the that, and having all that ready to go. And but then being very flexible and being committed to having fun. I remember this was once a long, long time ago, and I was doing a floating mime gig in Watts at a city festival. And I'm thinking, oh my God. And it wasn't so much that Watts bothered me, but I'm just like, what am I going to do for hours floating around as a mime? And I said, you know what? This isn't me. I'm a mime. This is like shamanistic. And for me, I made it kind of spiritual almost. I said, I am going into the archetype, the shaman. Because in Latino culture, the clown, a payaso or however you say it, is the shaman. So I said, okay, I'm just going to let go and let the character take over. And I had the best day. And they loved me. And the parents loved me. And the kids loved me. And the gangbangers loved me. You know?
Oh, my God. Well, that's a good thing. You made it out alive. You got to make sure the gangbangers love you. So you basically just got it. You took the character, you created a backstory, and that really came through. So that's pretty much what you have to do as an actor. So
yeah.
that backstory really helped you to execute the character that you had in mind.
Exactly. And I had to let go. I said, and I had to really say, this is not me. And I was hiding behind the white face. And that's okay, because that's what so many artists do, you know? So I let the character take over.
Yeah, I mean, everyone in the world has a social mask, and more so mm-hmm. actors and singers than anyone else. But, oh, maybe the clown, too. Now we have to add the clown, too. Now, let's talk about, so you being a – you do so many things. You're an opera singer. You are a cabaret singer. You do other things. What are the other things that you do? Because you're pretty eclectic. I don't think I know all the things you do.
Right. Sometimes I don't know all the things, or I forget. but yeah, there's definitely the opera, which I went to school for, and I do a lot of crossover and the German stuff. And then I also dance for a living. I was part of a group called the Gypsy Folk Ensemble, and we did seasonal dancing. So in the month of March, I did Irish dancing. And all through the summer, I do Polynesian, luau's. I do, you know, the hula and the Maori and the Tahitian. And, you know, and then I do the Mexican for Cinco de Mayo. And so we did different styles of dancing. I lived in Africa for a while, and so I studied a lot of African dance. And although I don't do a lot of African dance professionally, because, yeah, I'm not African looking, so it's...
Yeah,
it's
you are work. Quite white. I thought I was white until I met you. No. We're about the same color. We're real white.
It's all the white face.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also I have a program, which I'm very passionate about and have been doing, you know, since I was out of college, and it's called the Imagination Workshop, and it's out of the Neuropsychiatric Institute of UCLA, or the Semmel Institute for Neuroscience, where we do theater improv as therapy with schizophrenics, with veterans, with now Alzheimer's, with mentally ill.
Wow! Are you kidding?
No, and I love it.
So what is a day like? Wow. Oh, you've just given me lots of visions, lots of visions. So wait a minute. So what does a day consist of when you there? So there's a bunch. There could be a bunch of schizophrenics in a room and you act out characters. Now, isn't that kind of putting your life on the line with them seeing things already? I mean, have they ever like leapt for you to wring your neck or something? Are you scared? I mean, what? Tell me what's going on.
Yeah, actually, I've never had any fear. I've felt very at home. So we do an hour workshop or a 50-minute workshop. Our program is quite strict how we're trained, although it seems very free once you're in the workshop. There's three of us artists, or at least two of us from the program, two or three of us who have been trained. Plus, we always require that a staff member is there. So when Yeah, you got to have the staff. So when we're at the Neuropsychiatric Institute, we would have the psychiatrist there and then ourselves, or the psychiatric nurse and then ourselves. And usually the patients are medicated because when they're in an institution, they are. And I have to say, it's amazing because, you know, they'll play characters other than themselves, and something about the creative work grounds them.
I wonder why, since they're already seeing things already. That would be something that would be right up their alley. So that's good. Yeah.
Exactly. Use what you got, right?
Yeah. That makes perfect sense now. It grounds them. Are you sure it's not that medication or the thought of that needle standing by ready to dose them out? Is it actually therapeutic with the play going on?
Yeah, because they're, you know, we don't do like any medication before or after. I just think that they are on their meds throughout the day. And, you know, I've seen schizophrenics all of a sudden get coherent, to get lucid with the work. There's something about doing the creative thing that all of a sudden they do exactly what we ask for, because we ask for, okay, now you're going to create this. Pretend you're in a castle. What's your name? Who are you in the castle? Blah, blah, blah. And they write it down. They're right there.
I see. That makes sense now, because they can jump to that real quick, I would imagine, just turning on your character. Oh, wow. And what do you see as a result of that, other than that immediate change in them? Do you think it has any long-term effect?
Well, some of the neuroscientists who are on our board are saying they do see chemical changes in the brain. That's why, you know, we're being backed by UCLA, because it seems real sort of la 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 and frou-frou, but the neuroscientists are seeing something, so they're backing it up. One of the psychiatric nurses said he saw a change in the affect, because a lot of schizophrenics will have a certain affect in their face and the way they are, and then people judge them a certain way because they're sort of down, and he said he'll see them change or they'll smile. And there was one guy I had at the VA hospital. He was a veteran, but he was also had been a gangbanger, a gangster on, you know, on the streets for many, many years. And he was really a really hardened guy. You know, he had the teardrops tattooed and everything. And he said, you know, for the first time in my life, I feel like I can be somebody else and people don't have to judge me, because I'm always judged wherever I go. But when I do this, I feel like all of a sudden I can get out of that.
Oh, that is lovely. That makes me feel so, so happy. So many people think, I don't know if it's so many people, but I think that people only attribute to, I don't think that they really think that people who are mentally ill are in pain. They only think people who have physical pain are really in pain, and they don't really give as much, not everybody, again, I'm speaking in general, they don't give as much of a compassionate eye towards people who have mental illness. And anything that can cause a person to commit suicide or is pretty painful. If you're in that much mental anxiety that you want to take your own life, that is painful. It's a different kind of pain, but mental illness can cause you to be physically in pain as well as mentally. So it's like a double dose. So I don't think a lot of people can appreciate what you're doing and think that it's significant, but that is quite, quite significant what you're doing to help people.
Yeah, a lot of people don't see that mental illness is an illness. They just say, well, what's wrong with that guy, you know? And it is an illness, and I agree. It is, you know, because I've had, you know, periods of depression, and it is a physical pain. You can't locate where it is in the body, but it's a physical pain, and it's something that you can't control necessarily when it comes over you. And so, and people just don't understand that. There's more and more education now understanding that illness, that mental illness is illness, and that addiction is an illness. People didn't understand that before either, because we've worked with addicts. And that can be a real illness.
It most certainly is. I can speak that I'm a sugar addict, so I'm telling you right now, I can't stop eating sugar. People who are skinny say, well, all you have to do is just not eat the sugar. Don't take the ice cream. Don't drink the Coca-Cola. But you know what? When you have that sugar feeling and it comes over you, I literally and physically crave the sugar. There's something wrong with me. I fully admit it. I can't get away from sugar. Therefore, I think I am a sugar addict. But people don't really give any, they think that it's just a person who is heavy. They think, they just don't have any control. They refuse, they're self-indulgent. But you know what? There are lots of studies that are proving, yes, there are addicts of many kind, drug addicts, sex addicts, gambling addict, and yes, there are sugar addicts, and mental illness needs to be really treated more seriously, and ways like you're doing, which are therapeutic in other ways other than the traditional stuff. I think they need to have outside the box therapy.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because creativity, it's amazing what it does. And you know, sugar, it's necessary, but sugar is also a drug. I knew an acupuncturist who said sugar is more dangerous than heroin, because she said,
yeah,
I can cure heroin addicts, but I can't cure a diabetic, because sugar is really a tricky thing. It's very tricky.
Oh, God, I'm so glad you're saying that. Oh, you understand the sugar lover's addiction. I am so happy about that. You know what I want to do? We're going to take a commercial break, but when we come back, Christina, I want to talk to you about, give you some information. I can't talk. My mind is like, I'm completely going crazy here. What I want to talk about is about you as an opera singer. I want to talk about, how do you get steady work in the world of professional opera? I want to find out what the opera world is really like, and I want to find out if it's a lucrative career. So let's talk about that. We're going to take a real quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to find out about the world of opera.
Cool.
Okay. All right, so let's hear this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful commercial for this new product by Sophie Venable. So it is called, oh my gosh, Oshibori. So let's hear all about it right now.
Hi, everyone. This is Sophie Venable from MILF Talk, Make Your Life Fabulous, right here on LA Talk Radio. I'm here today to ask you to help me kickstart my dream. For almost 4 years, I've been trying to create Oshibori, a fabulous case for wipes, to replace that flimsy white plastic thing that lets your wipes dry out. The Oshibori is beautiful, refillable, and it keeps your wipes moist. Yay! So if you go to Kickstarter.com and type in Oshibori, that's Oshibore, into the search, you can check out my page, watch my silly video where I tell my story in a 3-minute musical, because I'm not above singing for my supper, and pledge if you feel so moved, and be among the first owners of a beautiful Oshibori. Even if you just share the link with your friends, I would be so grateful. So there you have it, Oshibori on Kickstarter.com. And of course, thanks for listening to LA Talk Radio.
Woo! Woo! I think I want one of those. It sounds like a really, really great product. So when you go to the Kickstarter website, you will learn all about this product. But I checked it out, and it really, it's like they have these fabulous cases for wipes, and it replaces that awful white plastic thing that lets your wipes dry out right away, and it keeps your wipes moist constantly, because sometimes I leave it open and they all dry out. So I'm very excited about this product. So I hope that people go to the website and contribute so that she can get this product on the assembly line. See, this is what I was saying earlier when I was talking about the Creepy Caress project on Kickstarter. This is another person who has a product on Kickstarter. It's not a donation for a television show or a radio show or film. It is for a product. So people make use of that website. Really good. But please read the terms, because a lot of times you get really close to your goal, and if you don't make it in the designated time, they do take either all the – they take a huge percentage out, or you don't get the money that's been collected. So read the terms. Okay, Christina, we are back with you. Now let's talk about an opera singer, people who are interested in pursuing that. First of all, what city or country should a person be living in to get steady work in the world of professional opera?
Right. That's a very good question, because, first of all, my career has been very crossover, but I know all about the traditional opera world, so I'll talk about the traditional opera world. You know, first of all, the career doesn't start usually until later. People usually do college and they do grad work studying opera. And then you really need to go to Europe, unless you're assigned to an opera house here in the United States. But really, Europe is the place to go, especially Germany, because every small town has at least one opera house, and it's funded by the state. So there's real money there. There's a real career, and you're usually assigned for at least a season or a year with many different roles. For example, here, the LA Opera, they don't take local talent. They take talent. They take artists from Europe, except for the chorus. Now, if you want to sing in the chorus, which there's, you know, which is a great career too, then you can try out for the opera here, LA Opera, or you know, San Francisco. But if you want a career as an opera singer playing roles, you really got to go to Europe, and you really got to study. You know, you can't just, you know, sing and learn the roles on your own. You got to do conservatory programs. You got to really get to know the arias and the roles for your fa, your type.
Now, can anyone be an opera singer? I know I have some friends who love and adore opera, and they're pretty good singers, like regular singers, like pop singers, but they actually want to play their hand at doing opera. Now, I don't know if that's possible. Do you have to start training at a very young age to be an opera singer, or can you make a transition by getting the right teacher? Is that possible?
I think you can make a transition, because opera, you know, you don't want to start too young, because you can do some vocal damage. It's not like violin. Like, if you wanted to be like a violin soloist prodigy, you really needed to have started, you know, in elementary school. But with opera, you can start later if you haven't done too much damage in doing pop or other stuff.
Right.
But it really is the training. And so not only are you going to need a teacher, for example, I studied opera at USC, and with the curriculum, you had, of course, a voice teacher, but then you had a vocal coach, and the coach worked with you on languages and music styling, and you did that twice a week with both, and then you had to work on the languages, and then you need to really know the repertoire, and then before you can even go out there and audition, you have to at least show that you've done some workshops with some scene study, some studying some of the scenes. So it's definitely a huge training thing. Like, they talk about Netrebkov, who's this sort of celebrity opera singer. She's this gorgeous Russian woman, and they say she was just discovered as, you know, a cleaning lady. She was a cleaning lady at the opera, and then they heard her sing, and now she's a huge star. Well, what they don't tell is when they did hear her sing, they realized this is a great potential voice. So somebody paid for her and took her under their wing, and for 3 or 4 years, she went to a type of conservatory program.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that was a similar story to once we were watching American Idol, and there was a young girl that was working at a sort of like the Hollywood Bowl, but not somewhere in her city, and she was cleaning toilets. She was the janitorial person, and she had always wanted to be a professional singer, and she went and auditioned for American Idol, and she got on the show. She never made it to the finals, but at least she got on there. So every job is a possible opportunity if you stay within the realm of entertainment, I would imagine. You never know.
Right.
So when you, what is the opera world really like? I have heard horror stories. Now, I have an aunt who was a professional opera singer, so I have heard some opera stories. But why don't you tell us from your experience, what is it like? I've heard everything from it's so clicky to it's so hard to get a job to you better take two jobs to supplement your income to, you know, why don't you tell us what your experience is like? What is your experience like, or what is your impression of the opera world? And if it's pro, then how does one have a successful career, getting to a successful career as an opera singer? And if it's
right.
negative, we want to hear that too. All right.
Right, right. Well, opera, it's a specific thing. Like, I know an incredible soprano. She's one of the best sopranos I've ever heard. And she's not working because, you know, she would have had to go to Europe. So it is like what I said before, like, you know, doing the conservatory program. And then you have teachers and coaches. And then you've got to go around and do the circuit of auditioning. And usually you go to Europe. And, you know, they have a time, I forget when the season is, but they audition for their next season. So after you're completely prepped and you know the roles that you're right for and you know the arias for those roles and you've studied, and then you go around and you do the auditioning. And so it really is kind of like conductors and a lot of classical soloists. They either have to have a sponsor or have come from money. I haven't seen a lot of people support their way through it because you also have to do so much vocal rest. And then, you know, a lot of what you're doing is you're singing at benefits for, you know, for the philanthropists. They'll have a dinner and then you come and sing some arias and they give money, that sort of thing. So I've seen a lot of people have sponsors, or I've seen people, they have to go to Europe and audition in the houses. Now, my career was a little different because I do the crossover thing. So I rarely sing classical music in classical music settings. I'll do opera in, you know, a circus type setting. I've done definitely some concerts, like for the LA Philharmonic Society. My niche, fortunately, has been the German community here, the diplomatic community, and so I've given concerts at the Goethe Institute, and there's sort of a built-in audience there of people from the old country who want to hear this music.
So are you happier as crossing over into the – what would you say your style of music is now? Pop.
Well, it's crossover classical, more the Sarah Brightman, that Andrea Bocelli type of music, although I do some very straight classical stuff. And I would say, yeah, not only am I happier, but it's also, it's just what I am, you know? Like people used to say, only do this if you can't do anything else. And, you know, this is just where the path led me. And once somebody actually gave me a great, I loved the compliment that he gave me. I was giving a concert of very, very old music. And afterwards he said, you know, I saw a rock and roller in there. and somebody said, she brought the old archaic music to life. I didn't change it at all musically. But with the spirit, they wrote in the papers, they said she brought the music to life so that modern audiences could relate to it. And so there's always been a bit of a rocker in me, but, you know, I grew up with only classical music. Like, rock and roll was forbidden in the household. So.
You know, so. I saw here in your bio something very interesting. it says here that you studied acting and movement at Oxford University in England.
Yes.
Again with the silver spoon, you! and then French at the Euro Center in Paris, and mm-hmm. German at the
Goethe Institute, yeah.
and you received your bachelor's in music and vocal arts from USC, which we talked about. And it says that you appeared opposite Oscar winner Maximilian Schell in Faust Comes to Grand Avenue with the Los Angeles Opera. And the reason I'm pointing that out is because I was in, I was a supernumerary at the LA Opera for Der Rosenkavalier, and Maximilian Schell was the director.
Oh, how great. Oh, so you worked with Max. Oh, how wonderful.
So it was very, very, very cool, especially when I fell, you know, that it's a period piece and it's the big hoop skirts, and I come falling on the stage, rolling in front of Maximilian Schell. So, but that's another story.
That's so great.
That wasn't so cool. But he was a really cool guy. I really liked working with him. And that was my first and only adventure in the opera, personally. But it was a really, really neat experience. I enjoyed it very much. And I'm glad I had that opportunity. So I want to talk about what's going on, what's coming up now. What are you working on? What can we expect? Where can we buy your CD? And then we're going to grace the audience with playing the show out with one of your songs called Redwood, I believe. So let's talk real quick because we only have a couple minutes left, but I want to talk I talk about what's going on, what's coming up, where can we see, et cetera.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, the CDs, both Circus Sanctuary and Voodoo Princess, are available online. You can either get the songs individually on iTunes, or you can get the CDs at CD Baby. So they're online, downloadable.
What's the name again? Let's repeat the name.
Yeah, so the album, the first album is called Circus Sanctuary, like my website. And the second album is called Voodoo Princess.
Now, what type of songs can we hear on Circus Sanctuary and Voodoo Princess? Are they the same type or different?
They're all sort of different and the same type. They're sort of like a world music backbeat. And then I took a lot of public domain tunes and famous opera arias and rewrote the lyrics and so updated them a little. And the song that you're going to hear is a little more classical. I kept the Puccini aria and I kept it in the same key and then just made sort of a Andrea Bocelli type background. Some of the stuff I sing a little more poppy, but not quite. So people say it's a mixture between Kate Bush and Sarah Brightman and I think that group Pink Martini, although I don't know what they sound like. So it's sort of like that. It's not straight opera at all, but it is crossover.
I love Sarah Brightman. I love, 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 love her. And I, when I was taking singing classes at a local college, one of the teachers who ended up knowing my Aunt Marilyn Horne, she said, Sarah Brightman was not a real opera singer. And I did not understand that. And she said, well, you wouldn't understand it if you're not a singer or you do opera. Just if you could really succinctly tell me what your opinion on that is, because I love her. I think she's an opera singer. But what do you think?
She's great, but no, she would never be able to work in standard traditional opera. That doesn't mean she doesn't have a great voice, but it's not the right voice for opera. It's very, very particular. She's definitely crossover classical. Yeah.
That is exactly what Marilyn Savage said. God bless her. Okay.
You know Marilyn Savage? Oh, we have to talk about
that. Marilyn. Oh, yeah. She was our voice teacher. So, yeah. Oh, I'm getting a notice. We're going to have to play your song because we got 2 minutes to go. So let's close the show out with your song, Redwood. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and ask you to come back next year.
I'd love to. I'm there in a heartbeat.
Yes. And then, of course, you're going to perform at my birthday party like you did last year where you were the total hit. Hopefully we can get Georgia and you two can dance and whoop it up again.
Yeah, that would be great.
Thank you so much, everybody. It is Christina Linhart. Please go to her website, circussanctuary.com. And we thank you for coming. And let's listen to your song, Redwood. Bye, everybody. Bye. Say goodbye
bye-bye
to your fans, Christina.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.